Hello and welcome to Outside In. My name's John Burns and this is my podcast for outdoors people. I'm very honoured to say that we've an author with us in the studio today, or our virtual studio. I think he's actually in Tasmania. Our author today has written what I think is quite an important book. It's really a book about recovery from an accident and about finding a way through adversity, I think. It's also been shortlisted for the Great Outdoors Book of the Year. So I'm really delighted to have the author of The Mountain Path, Paul Pritchard, on Outside In today. How are you, Paul?
I'm good, John. Yeah, and very good to be here.
Great. I was interested to read that your sort of climbing journey in many ways started in Lamberis, in what in some ways was a bit of a mini golden age for British climbing. Is that right?
I think it was, yeah. I kind of started climbing in the 80s, and there was a lot of unemployment around it. It was the Margaret Thatcher years, and kind of, 4 million people unemployed, and miners' strikes and IRA bombs going off. It was actually quite, now looking back, it was actually quite a important era in history.
Yeah. But it also be there were a lot of unemployed climbers around then who, I suppose, in a weird way, it allowed them to focus on developing their climbing and becoming a sort of an alternative community in a way.
Yeah, I think that the levels of unemployment and the ease with which you could sign on the unemployment benefits meant that creativity flourished in all sorts of unlikely places, including so many people started to flourish in the arts and I think Tracy Emin and all those guys started their creative journeys on the dole as well, and so it was kind of like a microcosm of that really, and so there was a whole team of us that would just get up in the morning, go out climbing, doing these frightening new routes sometimes. it was in the days before sport climbing was was a thing, really.
So you there were guys really pushing the envelope at that time, and I mean, I'd not really thought of it in that way. I mean, it was a fairly stark period in our history. I can remember those. I moved up to Inverness just before the miners' strike. I had been working near Barnsley, which is a big mining area. So I was really well aware of all that. One of the themes in your book, and one of the things that you talked about in your book, which I think struck a chord with me really, was you talked about how climbing, in a sense, I suppose, reduces life to its simplest form. There's you, the rock, or the ice, or the mountain, I suppose, and a lot of the complications of modern life are stripped away. Is that what you meant by climbing taking life to a simpler place?
Yeah, I think that is well accepted and well written about already. That, and I think I only mentioned that briefly. But to but it is just you and the rock. As soon as you step off the ground, you've got to be very, very focused on what you're doing. And so, I mean, I liken it to meditation, really. And as soon as you step off the ground, you've got to be in the moment, or else you could hurt yourself, or worse. And so it does just engender this kind of pinpoint focus when you're doing it. And if you do that day in and day out, it's like mind training, really. And I think that's why a lot of climbers are actually very, very focused people who find it quite easy to concentrate.
And that's something that I mean, modern life gives us so much input, particularly these days with the internet and everything else. And so it's great. I think you're right. I think it not only does it strip away that complication, but it also links us very much to the natural world. And after all that is where we come from, isn't it? I thought that was, I thought it was a really good point that you made in the book. And also, I was interested to read, you've also, you died once, didn't you?
I actually, I know a lot of people wanted me to take that bit out where I say that I actually died, because they're like, well, why are you still here if you died? you not mean that you nearly died, but I mean, I hold by the fact that my B layer couldn't find a pulse, and I wasn't breathing, and I totally drowned. I was in underwater for 10 minutes.
Well, it was a sea cliff, wasn't it? Tell us what happened.
Yeah, I was climbing up the back wall of a very famous zaun at Gogarth.
Right.
In North Wales, on the Isle of Anglesey, where there's such classic climbs as Dream of White Horses and Conan the Librarian. And I was about 30 metres up, and I was, I reached up and around this overhang, and there was water running across the hold that I was hanging on, and it was really, really steep. So when I took my feet off, they just cut loose, so I'm just kind of hanging from my fingers. And there was this tiny little piece of protection called a walnut, a kind of a stopper that was about the size of a kind of, I don't know, like a splinter. and that was my nearest piece of protection. And I thought it was a good placement. And so I thought that I would actually just fall onto it and go about 20 feet. And the actual wire snapped when I fell onto it. And then that just meant that it just accelerated, and the pieces, the other protection, just kept on popping until I kind of hit the kind of sloping shelf and broke my tibia and fib and fractured my skull, and then bounced into the water where there was head first, but it was in a narrow cleft, and so I broke both my shoulders and got wedged under the water. My belayer Glenn, my mate, he had to kind of get himself off out of the rope system, and that was the belay, and then get himself down to me and pull me out. Luckily, he's a big strong chap, and he pulled when he pulled me out, he lay me down on the shelf, like about 10 feet above the sea, and he couldn't find a pulse or a breath, and he started kind of resuscitating me. At least he knew how to do that, and I was in a garden with bees buzzing around, and kind of naked in glorious warm summer. It seemed like a summer's evening, and I was just it was the most pleasant, extreme, you know, they say, ultimately beautiful time of my life. And then suddenly I was just in real pain, and like with water shooting out my mouth, and everything went white, and it was like I actually really regretted coming back. But and then I mean, it was just me and him down there, because it was actually steadily raining, and so it took what felt like hours. I think it was a couple of hours before, with just Glenn not knowing what to do, and then trying to climb up the sides of the Zon wall, and then this lone figure appeared at the top of the Zon, and Glenn shouted up to him. It's about kind of 200 foot high, the Zon at the back wall, and Glenn shouted up to him, and he called a rescue, maybe, you know. And so I got helicoptered out. Yeah.
That's
Put in a lifeboat, actually, and then helicoptered. Yeah.
I think that's about as close to death as you can get, really, isn't it, Ruth? If you've no pulse and you're not breathing, I think you're pretty close. But it sounds like you're a bit pissed off to be pulled out of that nice garden in a way.
No, I mean, I tell you what, though, I never experienced a lot, you know, going towards a light or anything like that. It just felt like it did feel like I was going back to something, and it felt like it was a really beautiful thing, but it also felt like I was just going to fade out into blackness.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well. Okay. I don't know whether
Yeah.
I'd. I. I. I don't know whether I want to visit that place myself, but I suppose we all do eventually, don't we? Tell us a bit. I won't go into the. I don't want to make it sound as though your life is just from one accident to another. I'm sure it isn't.
No, no.
but obviously the accident that you had in Tasmania, where you got severe head injuries, has been very life changing. And I just, what was it like coming back from that accident? Because you very much, you know, obviously you were driven, I can tell, to get back into climbing. What was, I mean, that must, you've obviously been through one hell of a journey. There's no denying that. What's that been like for you?
Are you talking about what was it like for me getting back from the Gogarth accident, or what was it like?
Sorry, no, the one in Tasmania, the big one that you had in Tasmania, really getting back from what was a sort of life-changing incident into doing what you want again, because you've obviously done a lot of that.
I mean, do you think I ought to explain what that accident was before we
go on?
I mean, I'll start from the beginning. I won the Boardman Tasker Award with my first book, Deep Play. And with the prize money, I spent it on a round the world kind of climbing tour for me and my then partner, Celia Bull, and we, who now lives on the Isle of Eigg.
Oh, right. Okay.
And at length, we found ourselves in Tasmania, this remarkable island called Tasmania. It's kind of quite remote. But more so, we found ourselves at this piece of rock called the Totem Pole, which is even more remote. And I hope that you might show listeners a photograph of the Totem Pole or something.
Yeah, I've got that. I'll put that on the page. Yeah. It's what we would call, I guess, a rock stack. It's a pillar, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a sea stack. That's what it's known as. I mean, a bit like the Old Man of Hoy, but sticks straight out of the sea. We were trying to do the second free ascent of it. The first free ascent was done in 1995 by Steve Monks, and we were trying second free ascent in 1998. We had to fight down to the headland to even get to the. To get to the top of the headland, because it was so overgrown in those days, and then when we got there, we saw that there was a rope leading from the headland to the top of the Totem Pole. I must say that the Totem Pole is not only sticking straight out of the sea, but it's 65 meters high and only 4 meters wide. It's so slender that it's a very improbable piece of rock. It's so slender that it sways slightly when you stood on top of it.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah.
I'll let you do that.
Yeah. So there was this piece of rope going from the top of it to the headland, and we thought that we would avail ourselves of this piece of rope instead of abseiling, you know, descending down a potentially loose headland. We would go to the top of the Totem Pole and then descend this kind of wave-blasted piece of dolerite that wouldn't have any loose rock on it. And so I went down first all the way to the bottom on a 60-meter rope. And then I got myself off the rope, and then before I shouted, could even shout up to Celia to come down to me, the boulder that I was stood on, which was the only boulder kind of in the water at the base of the totem pole, well, a wave hit me and soaked me through to my chest, and I knew that there's no way that we could really safely climb the first pitch of the totem pole. And so I shouted up to Celia to just come down to this kind of halfway ledge. The totem pole is split by a ledge, about the size of a sofa, and you belay on that, and then, so it's two pitches high. So she came down to the halfway ledge, and we thought that we would just have a crack at the top pitch. And these pitches are really quite difficult, you know. It's like it's vertical with
mm-hmm. Incredibly steep. Yeah,
I don't know if you listeners will be aware of kind of Master's Edge, at Millstone Edge in Hobart. In Sheffield, in the Peak District, but it's a famous route by Ron Fawcett. It's a bit like that anyway. Kind of very, very, very like a sheer erect, like, oh, I know, like a kind of the corner of a block of flats.
Oh, right, I got you now. Yeah, okay.
Yeah. And anyway, I put my kind of rope ascending clamps onto the rope and swung around the kind of edge of the block of flats, and as I did that, the rope dislodged a kind of flake of rock, and I didn't see it coming, I didn't hear it coming, and the next thing that I know, I was upside down, blood pouring into the sea, and the sea was only about a meter below me. And then I went unconscious again, and then I was aware that Celia was by me, kind of trying to get me upright in a system of slings. She'd abseiled down the rope to me. Then she had to climb back up the rope, and to the ledge. And then she had to haul me 30 meters up a sheer wall. So a bit like hauling a dead body up a block of flats, really. Yeah. And that took her 3 hours. And she was, by the time she got me there, her hands were bleeding. There's only me and her down there. And it was in the days before mobile phones, 1998.
Yeah.
So then she had to get herself off the totem pole, climb these cliffs opposite the totem pole, and then run 6 kilometres over a mountain to get to the nearest ranger station where there was a phone to get help. Not knowing whether I was going to live or die, because I was always, you know, she'd seen the hole in my head.
Yeah, absolutely. Very serious position to be in.
Yeah, I mean, probably the most difficult place to get rescued on the whole coastline of Tasmania, really. It's a wild coastline. A bit like, you know, Patagonian coastline or something. And so 10 hours later, I hear the sound of helicopter rotor blades on the wind, and And a fellow named Neil Smith, a paramedic, descended the rope to me. And judging by the amount of blood on the ledge, he thought that he was just in for a simple corpse recovery or something.
No, right.
But when he saw that I was still alive, he knew there was no time to lose. And so he clipped me to his harness, threw me over the edge again, and abseiled down to a waiting boat that was just a normal, like a metal motorboat. We call them tinnies in Australia. And the tinny was going up and down by 6 feet on the waves. And so on the upsurge, Neil, the paramedic, cut the rope and we both fell into the boat. It was quite exciting, really. Yeah. And I remember all this, really. You know, I was like going in and out of consciousness, but I was basically, even though I'd lost half my blood when I got to hospital, I was still conscious.
No, that's an incredible incident. I mean, and you've actually been back since and climbed it again, which I find incredible. But you have. What was that like?
Oh yeah, I mean that's basically what the last chapter of the book is about that. It was in 2016, so 18 years later, and I often say that it was my 18th birthday because I feel like I was reborn,
right,
on the totem pole. You know, not just reborn into a new body, but reborn into kind of, you know, my whole philosophy on life and death kind of really changed then. When I got down there, I took the same swing that I took that dislodged the rock that resulted in the brain injury. I must say, we've not even discussed my injuries, have we? I mean, I'm hemiplegic, which means that I can't use my right, well, one leg and one arm. So in my case, my right side is completely paralyzed.
Right.
And I'm epileptic. I spent a year in hospital, in a Liverpool hospital, after that accident. So, I mean, it was a very, very serious accident.
No, absolutely. But you must have been absolutely determined to get back on the rock, basically. Is that right?
Well, in the book, I discuss how the mountains kind of fostered that determination, and climbing day in, day out, kind of, it just kind of fosters this whole acceptance, which made me survive. You know, I don't think that without all the lessons I'd learned on the mountain, I would have survived. Never mind survived these last 25 years as a 23 years as a disabled person. I've forgotten what the question was now.
Yeah, so have I. Well, never mind. I just thought it must take an absolute, you know, absolute determination to do that. But you've obviously, you know, I suppose you had kind of two choices after that, after an accident of that severity. You could have sat and watched TV for the rest of your life and thought, "Well, thank God I'm still here." Or you could follow your passion. And it sounds like you've done that, which I think a fantastic thing. And also, you've done. It sounds to me as though, would you say that you've developed a great mental strength out of all this?
Yeah, first of all, there's a caveat to that. Don't get me wrong. I think that I was lucky enough to get hit on the head in a certain area, like get, many people that I saw in rehab were not as lucky as me. They were very, very disinhibited or fully paralyzed, or just kind of there's a whole the whole gamut of kind of serious injury, and I was, even though I can't move my foot or my knee or my arm or my or clench a fist with my hand, and I feel very lucky. And so that's kind of where I'm coming from. But what was the question again?
Well, I think we were just talking about the determination of it, and I think, and you,
Yeah.
what you seem to be saying is
Yeah.
that I think that you, how can I put it? It sounds to me as though the people that you met, going through your rehabilitation, you still felt like Paul Pritchard. So some of them maybe weren't,
Yes,
if weren't the people who they'd been before, and that's a rather brutal way of putting it, but you know. But your book charts an incredible journey, and I really hope it does well for you, and I'm sure it will. I'm sure it will be very widely read. But listen, thanks very much for talking about your book. It's been fantastic. I mean, that's our interview sort of we're running out of time here, which is quite. Oh, we could have talked for an awful lot longer, I'm sure.
Oh, wow, okay.
But that was great. Is there anything you'd like to say before we actually sign off? Or
Yeah, good luck for your book as well, John.
that's very
Yeah,
kind of you,
yeah,
Paul
yeah.
Pritchard. I wish you all the best with your book, The Mountain Path. It's been fascinating talking to you. Thanks very much.
Okay, bye, John.
Bye. Well, that was Paul Pritchard talking about his amazing little book, The Mountain Path, and really does chart in a beautiful and a thoughtful way, and affirms his refusal to give in to disability. Well worth a read, and obviously I'll put a link to that on the podcast page. Coming up on Outside In, I'll be interviewing Stephen Littlewood. Steve has written Wild Mole, A Natural History of the Island and Its People. I've only just had a look at this book, and it's full of fantastic illustrations. Really interesting little book about a beautiful place. So hopefully the next few days I'll be having Stephen on Outside In. I should tell you, there's a little plug. I've just recorded a seminar on mountain writing. If you're interested in writing about the outdoors, just some ideas that I've got about things that I've picked up on the way, really. And that'll be on YouTube fairly shortly. And I'll put a link again to my little YouTube video on this page. I do hope you've enjoyed listening. I've been John Burns, and this is Outside In. Thanks very much. Bye bye.